Welcome to All the Bits, a fake radio show about board games, the community, and all the lovely, lovely bits. All the Bits is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network and is sponsored by Board Game Bliss, a store where you can find an amazing selection of games from around the world, bringing joy to you and your loved ones. Without further ado, here are your hosts, Sean and Michelle.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 57.
In this episode's Bits, we'll talk about Fast Loss, Circadians, First Light, Imperial, Spells and Steam, and Conspiracy, the Abyss Universe. We'll discuss the BGG threat. Well, we're just going to complain and talk about Asmodee's new pricing policy and various nonsense. And we'll get up to all of our usual antics of asking pointless questions, guessing games, and drooling over bits.
All the bits.
I licked my mic there.
Ugh. Gross.
Too
gross.
We
not only reuse jokes, we also reuse banter. So please remember that we have from our wonderful show sponsor, Board Game Bliss, a code ATB-TAKE5OFF100 that will take $5 off your order of $100 or more. One use per customer.
Nice. And I've recently had a few bitsers actually reach out and thank us for the code. So
wonderful. Great. Speaking of purchasing games, Sean, I have a question for you. I was really trying to go low there. That's our sound effect, believe it or not, for our Ask Me Anything bit, which is where we ask each other anything. All right. So, so speaking of buying games, Sean, what's the next game you plan on purchasing?
I don't know. What are we in? We're in February, right? We're at the end of February. I feel like Die Crew, the English version, should be out very, very soon. So it's probably going to be that.
Okay.
Also, there's the Villainous expansion, I think, coming out this week. There's,
is that the second one?
No, that'll be the fourth one.
Oh, really? Wow. Okay.
I should have left that for last, because that would have been a great segue. And
we could edit it, but that isn't gonna happen. So.
No, then it'll be anyway. I've also been enamored with this Have you seen this for the Funkoverse game? This Kool-Aid. There's the Kool-Aid guy.
I did see that.
Oh my god! Yeah, is that too probably? Although I think I feel like that might be a Target exclusive type thing, which means I won't be able to get it until I go to the U.S. or something. But yeah, it's probably gonna be the Crew, because I feel like that's coming out this week.
Okay, I didn't know that.
I think it was supposed to be February, but February's over because it's a short month. In case anyone, spoiler alert.
Cool. I think mine's going to be Expedition to New Del. Okay, what?
Oh, no. Today's the first.
It is the first.
Darn it. I was like, we're recording this on the leap day. This would have been so cool. But it's not. Okay, ignore me. Hey, I have a question for you.
Yes?
Speaking of Disney's Villainous.
Okay.
I don't know if you've recently heard, you probably have, because you are a huge Marvel comic books fan. Villainous is coming out with Marvel's Villainous in summer.
No, I didn't know that. About this?
Do you know about
this? No.
Yes. Well, it's coming out with villains from Marvel. So, Michelle, since we know you are a ginormous pop culture fan.
Yeah.
If you could create any version of Villainous, what would it be?
Well, considering I haven't played the game.
But you know what it's about.
Yeah. So it's you have to have a bunch of bad dudes, right? Yeah. And good guys?
Well, the good guys are kind of the ones that cause the trouble. But really, you're thinking about it's the bad guys.
You know, I feel like this IP is already overdone. But I do love me some Rick and Morty. And I think that would be kind of fun, because you could have all the different weird creatures and universes that they come into or come across in their travels.
That's fair.
Yeah. So there you go.
I feel like of all the things you could have said or that anyone could brainstorm, I feel like Rick and Morty's probably one that might actually happen.
There have been a number of Rick and Morty games recently, but I don't know if they're any good. I'm going to guess they are not.
Well, speaking of Funkoverse, I think there is a Rick and Morty expansion pack for that. So, you know, you could always play that.
I would, just so I could touch those bits, but...
Speaking of touch bits, question mark?
Uh-huh. That is Guess the Game.
Mm-hmm.
Where we
guess the game.
Yeah, that's what we do.
Yeah.
All right, you ready? Yep, I'm going to give you some hints.
Okay, bring it on.
All right, 2014.
Okay.
7.3 with 8.7 thousand ratings.
Whoa. Okay.
Whoa. Plays 2 to 4 in 30 to 60 minutes and has a weight of 2.34.
Okay.
Let's see. The mechanisms.
Did you say how many players?
2 to 4.
Yes, you did say that. Okay.
30 to 60 minutes.
Yeah.
So you should have it by now. I mean, that's...
I should.
What more could you really ask for?
That's fair.
I will say this game has good bits. Like, one element of it has good bits. Okay.
Okay.
Auction bidding.
Raw.
Car drafting. I think Raw is older than 2014.
Probably. Is it the...
No, I don't.
For the galaxy? Roll to the galaxy?
No.
Okay.
Car drafting, hand management, memory, push your luck. Set collection.
I don't know.
You and I have played this game together.
What?
Yeah, actually what? Might have been one of the first games we played together.
That we played maybe. Together.
Yeah. At a meetup.
Huh.
Hmm.
I don't know.
It's known for its art, for its cover specifically.
Abyss.
There you go. Yeah.
We played that together. I don't remember.
We did. It was a 4-player game, and then you or I showed up late, so we like played the hand together, and we kept messing up a rule. I can't remember which one it was because we weren't really paying attention.
Of course, it makes sense though that you would remember that because I am unforgettable, right?
Yeah, that's really what it's about.
It makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay. Speaking of unforgettable.
Yeah.
This game you're going to try and guess is unforgettable.
Is it now?
So this, I almost said the name of the game.
I've done that a few times.
This game came out in 2015.
Okay.
Is rated whatever 7.6 on BGG. Has 3.3 thousand ratings. It plays 1 to 4 in 45 minutes and has a weight of 2.21.
Mm-hmm. That's nice.
I don't know if this will help you, actually, but I'm still going to give it to you. It is designed by Mike Fitzgerald.
Baseball highlights.
Damn you.
45.
Yes, that's it.
Which, by the way, I've played once, so...
Did you play it with me?
No, I did not.
Fail.
Yeah. You would have liked it too, because I was like throwing all my baseball know-how out there while I was playing it and like talking about player stats and like how thematic some of the cards were based on how good the players played the baseball.
And the baseball players are like cyborgs and monsters and stuff. Oh, no, they aren't monsters in this game, but they're like cyborgs and what's the other faction? I'm losing it. There's natural cyborgs and robots. Bots. Wow. Yeah. The Borg.
Isn't there some new. Like a reimagining of this, or
there's a football one that was
there's
on
a football one.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. I'll have to check that one out too. So, but you're not a big football fan?
Not as much as baseball. I mean, yeah. Baseball is.
Boom. It is. Yeah. I mean, it's baseball, right? Yeah. So there you have it.
There you do. Speaking of having it. Pew 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 pew. Pew. Hey, Michelle.
Yep.
So sorry, pew, pew, pew bit.
Is it now? I would not have guessed that from the sound effect.
Which we're going to talk about games that we have recently enjoyed or not enjoyed. And we're going to give you our thoughts on them. And we have a fancy, fancy schmancy 5-point rating scale. Would you like to share it with the good Bitsers?
I would. Number one. No, wait. That's not how that works. If we give it a one, it's a hard no.
Yeah, hard no.
A two? Meh. A three. I mean, it's fine. Four. It is a gooder. And five. It's got the spark.
Which, for those of you who don't know, according to Michelle, every game I play has a spark.
Yeah. And you sparkle a lot.
Speaking of the spark, Michelle.
No.
No. But I will start, okay?
Sure.
Because there's something about this first game, above all else, and it deserves the spark. But it really speaks to me as a human being and as an individual. So I just want people to know. And that game is Fast Sloth. And I cannot pronounce the plural of sloth. It's so bad. Fast Sloth. This is a 2-to-5-player game from Stronghold Games and designed by Friedman Fries and art by Harold Liske. And it came out in 2019. So, two things about this game had me gravitate towards it, Michelle. One, it's by Friedman Fries. And I'm a firm believer that no matter what I think of a game, upon reading about it, how interested I am in it, if it's designed by Friedman Fries, it deserves, at the very least, a play for me. Because, you know, in an industry where I feel like people just often follow suit over and over, Friedman Fries is constantly trying to innovate and do new things and weird, wacky things. That's true. Sometimes they work, sometimes they don't, but it's worth at least a try. And two, this game is about sloths. And it is, Sue, you would not think, you look at the board of it and you're like, this is not really a thematic game. It's just these like basic hexes with like different terrain types for myth. But oh my gosh, this game is like so thematic. You are a sloth and you are trying to get your food as efficiently as possible by using all the other animals to transport you there. So at no time are you, the sloth, actually moving yourself towards something. It's always another animal in nature has to get you there. So that's what's super cool about this game and really spoke to me, which is awesome.
To Sean's heart.
Yes. Totally. And I love it. Like the first line on BGG is, you are sloths. Cuddly, lazy, and oh well, slothful. So, yes. So this is, I guess it's a pickup and deliver game. But it's definitely a unique pickup and deliver game. In that what you are doing is the other animals are picking up you and delivering you to the food. So you're trying to get the most fruit. I think you're trying to get minimum eight different pieces of fruit that are on the board in tree houses, and there's different locations. So there's different locations on the tile. So you have like trees, which the fruit are in, but you also have resorts and water and bridges and et cetera, plains and mountains and whatnot. Then you have a number of discs, which are a number of animals on the board, which are represented by discs that you do have to sticker, which is unfortunate on the board. And then those animals all have different movement abilities and they can move around the board in different ways. So for instance, you have something like the donkeys, which they don't do anything fancy, but they move like either there's a deck of cards for each animal and they move up. So you start with the lowest and as you get more and more into the cards, they move more and more. So the donkey will start at two spaces, but will go up to five. And when you're playing the cards from your hand, you do you're drawing cards at the beginning of your turn. And then when you play, you can play as many of one type of card as you want. So you could play three donkeys worth a total of seven movement and move seven spaces. There's things like unicorns, which have, because unicorns are real animals, have high movement, but you can only play one at a time. There's things like elephants, which don't have a ton of movement, but they throw you after. There's birds, which move a ton, but you have to have a certain amount to move them. So there's different things. You're playing these cards and you're moving the animals. And when the animals are on the same space as the sloth or adjacent, they pick up the sloth and then you keep going on to try and get the fruit. That's pretty much what you're trying to do. At the end, when someone fills their board with all the fruit, that triggers the end game. Then everyone has one more turn because someone could potentially get one extra fruit because you need, I think, 8 fruit to trigger the end of the game. But you can get more than that 8 fruit as well. And you're doing that. You're going about playing the cards and trying to get the animals to take you to the fruit. So it is a pick up and deliver game, which is interesting. It was super enjoyable. It's fun to be like, oh, I'm a sloth and this unicorn is going to take me 5 spaces. Or the ants are super fun. The ants are like, you can create a chain with the ants. You have to like position them and then you can create this awesome chain with them to take you for little movements. And there's, I think, 12 different animals or 14 different animals. So you have some variability there. In each game, I think you only use 6 animals. So this was enjoyable. I did only play it the one time. I'm curious to see, and we did play it at 3 players. And I'm kind of curious what, yeah. So for, I think, yeah, it would probably shine at like a little bit of a higher thing because it does have that race component. And I'm sure the board, you're constantly screwing people. You know, I'm sure there's tons of take that in like a 5 player game with it. I would say for now, this game is kind of, I mean, it's fine. See, it's not a spark, Michelle. It's not a spark.
Yeah.
Right there, kind of in the middle. It is a good game. It is a game I would definitely play some more. And I wonder if I play it some more, if things would go up for me as well. But it was definitely fun. Like, I've played other Friedman Freeze games, and it's like, you play it once, and you're like, no, I'm good. I could see where the where the merits are in this game, but I have no desire to play it again. This game, I would totally play again. And I think exploring the other characters and the other movement animal thingies, I think there's the potential for this to kind of go up as well. So that's Fast Loss from Stronghold Games.
Cool. Pick me up and deliver me. It's the quote on the box.
Yeah, and they do that. They do, you know, if you're familiar with Galaxy Trucker, you know, the rule book. It's like someone's or Kanban, you as you're reading it. And so they make jokes and stuff. And it's like, so it's a super easy game. Like, it's not an in-depth game. You don't need a rule book to be. So they do a little something extra with the rule book, which is nice as well. It fits the theme of the game.
Yeah, it works. Yeah, for sure. Coo, coo, coo.
Coo.
Coo, pew. It rhymes. Man, that's genius. All right, my first pew-pew is Circadian's First Light, which I didn't hear anything really about, and then it was just there. True story. This is a dice placement euro, really. I'm just going to pull up it. Oh, here it is. Okay, so it was published in 2019, has a current rating of 7.8. It was on Kickstarter, apparently, so, you know. It's got the Kickstarter effect there, I think. 606 ratings, plays 1-4 in 60 to 90 minutes, and has a weight of 3.49. It was designed by S.J. McDonald. Artist is Sam Phillips, and was published by Garfield Games and Renegade for us. So, yeah, this is definitely like, yeah, a euro with dice. The way it works is there's a board with a bunch of different spots in which you place your dice that do a bunch of different things. Okay, so how does it work? It's a little more detailed than that. You roll your dice at the beginning of a round and you actually program your dice. So you decide what you want to do with them beforehand. And if you want to move your dice out onto the boards, the first one is free, but then it gets progressively more expensive to do them.
Sounds like drugs.
It does sound like drugs. That should be on the front of the cover. I think. And so what you're doing on the different boards, there's a lot around, there's collecting resources and trading resources, and you use resources to build item cards. So there's a number of item cards, kind of your typical fare, like some of them modify different spaces. Some of them give you end game goals. I can't remember if there are one-time effects. I don't recall there being any. End game points. So there are those. And then there are spots that allow you to modify your board. So at the end of every round, there's like a harvest phase, so you can increase what you get at the end of each round. You can modify the spots where you place your dice to go out so that they're either less expensive to put out, or maybe you can modify them slightly, that sort of thing. And then there's also a map board, which is made up of a bunch of hexes, and you have like a hex-shaped spaceship, but it's hollow in the middle so that you can see what is on the hex that you're on. And so one of the boards allows you to move around the board, which is rather expensive. And yeah, and all of these actions cost resources to do. Cards cost resources to build.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's like an end game scoring board where you pay like X number of resources and you put your die down, and then it actually stays there. So that's one of the things that's unique about this game is there's two boards, and yeah, when you put your dice there, that's it. You don't get them back. So obviously there's a few ways to get additional dice. Like there's actually a board that lets you buy dice, and there's some of the spaces on the map give you dice, that sort of thing.
Okay.
So yeah, so there's that. And then there's also the other board is where you would leave your dice is where you, when you want to build an item card. So basically every time you build a card, you lose a die. So that's kind of interesting. There's a little bit of trade-off there.
Yeah.
And then the other neat thing about the scoring board, so where you put your dice, is like if you're the first person to put a one there, you get to take a bonus. But there's also penalties. So once like a certain column, say, has like 8 pips or more, you have to start choosing penalties to take. So there's, you know, not a ton of interesting decisions, but a little bit of like, okay, where do I want to go? How do I, you know, trying to get there first so that you can get some of these bonuses and whatnot. There's asymmetrical player powers that are fairly strong and will definitely kind of push you one way or the other. There's events. It's like a mashup of, it feels like a mashup of everything. It really does. Yeah. So that's kind of the general overview of the game. So yeah, so I'll start with the bits, because I always start with the bits, because we're all the bits, and I like bits. Bits. So the bits are pretty good. They are in the same size. This whole game, this massive game, is in the size of like the Paladins of the West Kingdom box.
Mm-hmm.
Raiders of the North Sea box. Yeah. So this like tiny little box. So
makes
which
sense.
Is great, because it's like, wow, all this game in this little box, but like just fits. They have a great insert, fantastic. But the bits are a little bit small. So there's like wooden gems and water and kelp and lightning, which I think is supposed to be energy. And they're like really little. And then you can get a lot of them. Like, for example, in a harvest phase, you might get like 12 kelp. And there are like 10 point cards or 10 cards. So you can put like a kelp on there and be like, I have 10 kelp. But still, it's like a lot of like little picking up of little things, which gets kind of fiddly. But yeah, overall the production's good. Yep. The dice are nice. They're translucent. They're also very small. So everything's a little. Yeah, nothing about this game feels super unique other than the fact that it kind of said like, let's make a game with like everything, like events, asymmetrical powers. Yeah, like it just felt like everything. That being said, I think they actually did a pretty good job of it. Like considering just how much of a mashup it feels to me anyways, I think they did a pretty good job of still making it a pretty smooth, seamless experience. Okay. Yeah, I really liked the whole like having to give up dice, you know, that was kind of nice. And you can only have a maximum of, I think it's like 5 dice. So you actually are limited. It's not like you can just like hoard a bunch of dice and then do big turns. Like they actually limit you to how many you can have. So that's kind of nice. I liked the penalty and bonus system and the timing around that. So, you know, that was nice. The variable player powers I've talked about before. Nice. There's a pretty solid solo mode in it. I did give it a go. And there's each player board has a creature, a character, I guess, on the back, and they score slightly differently. So in the solo mode, you're playing against that character, and there's an AI deck, and it's really simple and smooth to do. Yet somehow, so I'm reading this rule book and I'm like, check, 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 check. Like, I'm going to love this game. And it has, yeah, it has everything I want, but I don't know. There's something missing from this game. There's something that is just like, it's a good game. It's a solid game, but something is missing. It does feel a little bit repetitive, and there's some like ramping up, because you do get, you know, once you build your item cards, you have a little bit more power in, you know, on some of the spots. And as you move your ship around on the board, you're going to obviously get bigger and better rewards during your harvest phase. You know, like you might start out getting like one resource and end up getting 12, you know, a few turns in. So there's some of that ramp up, but it kind of just feels a little bit repetitive. The event deck is like, is not, the events are not that interesting. Like they change things slightly, in my opinion anyways. And the deck is really small. Like I think you only remove a few, so there's not a ton of variability in that deck. And then I'm realizing I'm just not a huge fan of programming unless it's like a lighter game. Like I just don't want to sit there and think about, okay, I'm going to do this, and then I'm going to do this, and then I'm going to do this, and then I'm going to do, like, I'd rather just react in the moment. Like I don't mind planning my turn while other people are taking their turns, but that whole idea of like pre-programming everything, it just gets a little bit like, I don't know, arduous for me. Like just kind of like, ugh, come on. So I think that has something to do with it. So yeah, I've heard really, like I've actually heard a lot of good things about this game. Like people do seem to be enjoying it, and I can see why. The art's kind of weird. I think you either love it or hate it. But yeah, for me, it was just, there was something missing, and yeah, it started to feel a bit repetitive. Still enjoyed my plays of it, would happily play it anytime, I would think. But yeah, I'm just going to give it a high 3, which is, I mean, it's fine. With like a higher octave on the fine, because it's a high 3.
Nice.
Because that's how that works. I don't know if you knew that.
Yeah, apparently.
Yeah. So there you go. Circadian's First Light.
Alrighty. Well. What do I have? Oh, I don't even know how you pronounce this game. Okay. My next pew is, I guess it's Imperial, but the spelling's driving me crazy.
Yeah,
Imperial,
that's weird.
Imperial, they're trying to be fancy or funny. Imperial Spells and Steam from Level 99 Games. This was designed by Trey Chambers and art by Laura Levito and Eunice Abigail Tsu. I'll say the art because the art is gorgeous. Everything about... So this game, I was not aware of it because I go through periods where I just completely ignore Kickstarter. But this game kickstarted last year, I think, and just came out or just started shipping to backers. So I was able to play someone else's copy of this. And it's a huge box. Like, this is like, oh my goodness. Like, I don't know. I feel like it's taller than the Gloomhaven box, maybe. It's so big.
Oh my goodness. With these box sizes.
Yeah. It looks, you know what the box looks like? It looks like a box if you've ever seen. This is a slight exaggeration, but just the look of the box kind of looks like, you know, the box they keep like photocopy paper, computer paper in when you have multiple packages of it. Like one of those boxes, like almost like a
my goodness.
Box. It's so big. But the art on it, the graphic design is gorgeous. It's beautiful. That cover is stunning. Everything about this game is really nice. It's got, I'm going to guess they're 3D printed, although I'm not sure. The bits, like all the bits in this game, you know, I couldn't wait to talk about it. But honestly, the biggest attraction for me to play this game was how gorgeous it looked. So what you are doing, this is a route builder, basically. What you are doing, a pick up and deliver route builder. So if you think of something like, not comparing it to like Age of Steam, but, you know, that type of game where you're trying to pick up goods and then deliver them somewhere to a different city. They're all no-name cities. This game is like, the theme is that you're a technomancer. So it's like, you know, I think of it as that, like, you're basically trying to build the best Hogwarts Express train where you're playing this. You probably don't get that reference, Michelle, because
I know it's Harry Potter.
Yeah, there.
Thank you.
So you have, like, these trains that you're picking up goods that are laid all over the map, and you're trying to connect your route to a city to drop them off. And depending how many you drop off, you might even get a bonus chit, or you get a point for each of that particular good that you drop off. And you typically can only drop off one good. The other thing you're doing in this game is so you're moving along a track. You're a conductor dude. You're moving along a track, and you can only go to certain spaces to lay your track. There's five or six different colors, so you can only go to certain spaces as you're moving. The more you move, though, because it's got magic in it, you have mana that you're allowed to spend. You start the game, I think, with 5 points of mana, and each time you kind of go more than one space, you have to spend mana and to lay your track. And then you can do other different powers or different things. You can do multiple things, but you have to keep spending mana. So that mana dries up pretty quickly. When you need to have it back, you have to do something called administrate, and that basically lets you refresh your mana, but you're spending a turn to do it. But when you administrate, you can upgrade your cars, so that's what lets you lay your track, your cars. And there's ones that do let you lay multiple cards, let you get a certain power, etc. When you're ready to deliver something, you get to the end of the line. It's actually called the end of the line. That's where you could deliver something. And then you get one special ability. So I think you can either refresh. You could get an additional mana and refresh your mana. You can refresh your engineers, which I'll get to in a second, and get a new one. Or you can, I believe the other thing is that you can get, I think, 2 new cars. Okay, cars to upgrade your train. And you can get things. There are different engineers and different one-time effects that you can get throughout the game. Those are super powerful. They let you kind of break rules to the game, if you will. So I have played train games. I don't play a ton of train games, but I have train games. There are some wonky things because you're magic train drivers, you're magic trains here. So normally when you build when you're playing a train game and you're delivering something, you have to have some sort of continuous route to kind of get there. In this game, you don't necessarily have to have that. If someone has broken up your route, but your train is somewhere with that good you want to deliver, you just have to have your train at the city
where you're going.
So it's a bit weird to kind of wrap your head around that if you've played a train game, that, and it took me a while to kind of grasp that, and that you, because magic trains, so you could do that.
It's magic. What more could you?
Magic. So it works.
It's good.
Aside from that, it is a basic kind of pick up and deliver route building game. There's not a ton. The powers are fun. The powers are interesting. But at the end of the day, it's a lot of components for what's maybe, we played this with Teach in like an hour. The game goes relatively quick. The game goes really quick because the game is over once someone has 6 of those chests, so deliver 6 different goods to cities, 6 goods period, 6 delivery goods to periods, or I guess if all the goods are gone, both those things kind of happen in our thing. The goods get taken up pretty quickly. It seems like one thing that's interesting, it seems like there's a fair bit of take that in this game, which is interesting for a game like this. So this is kind of, for me, it was right in the middle there. It's fine. But to quote you, it probably gets it's fine for because those components, honestly, like, almost take it to the next step. They have like the awesome gamer trays. They have tons of different trays for each good. And like I said, the goods themselves are really nice. The art is nice on it. I love the player boards, which is your train is really nice. The engineers and different people, the technicians that you can hire to get the powers. Also, it's really nice, kind of cartoony, that, what's that word I'm looking for? I can't think of it. But, why can't I think of it, Michelle?
I don't know, and I don't know what
they wear the goggles and stuff. Old school, but they have technology. What's it blanking on me? Oh, it's driving me crazy.
No, don't. Sorry.
But anyway, I'll think of it after everyone's screaming. It's that thing. That thing really big these days. I don't know. Okay. Whatever. This game is a high 3 for me. I would totally play it again. I don't know how much. I think there's a lot of replayability in it because you have tons of different like technicians and engineers. You have tons of different of those cars to upgrade your trains. But in the end of the day, I don't know. I think there might be other train games that I would definitely prefer over this. So it'd be interesting though. I would definitely play it again. But yeah.
That's cool.
Imperial Spells and Steam.
So I've been looking at the pictures.
Yeah.
It looks super busy. Did you find it hard to make sense of everything? Because, like, for someone who's not, you know, isn't playing it and doesn't know the rules, it's like stuff everywhere.
There is. If I once have played train games before, like, been familiar with train type games, these types of games, I think it would have been hard. It is. And the colors also from the goods and the things on the board, the hexes on the board, they don't line up. Like, there's like, you have a pink good, but it goes to white.
I just noticed that.
Yeah, the colors aren't the best on it either. Yeah, I could totally see that though. It's definitely feels because you have all the resources on just about every space.
And yeah.
Spaces, while they're really nice, they're like they look like they're textured, so that adds to it as well. So I could totally, 100% could see that.
Well, and like, it's hard to see, like, there's a yellow train in the picture I'm looking at. There's like a yellow train route. And yeah, it's almost hard to see because like there's hexes with train bits and resource bits on them.
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't know. It just looks like it would be hard to make sense of. But
I could see that 100%. I could see that. Yeah.
But you didn't have that problem.
I didn't have that problem. But like I said, I'm familiar with you know, these types of games and I enjoy them. So I kind of knew what was happening before. It wasn't terrible. I think the trains are also different shapes. So that helps.
It does. Yeah.
So that helps making them out a little bit. But I agree. The yellows is hard. And again, the bits make it a little bit more difficult too, because there's sometimes you have like 6 different things on one hex, which yeah.
Cool. The bits do look pretty great, though.
It is definitely a game you get for the components. Because, like I said, if you're going to play a game like this, there are definitely much better games out there. But the components is a very nice package, as you would expect from level 99.
Cool. Well, my second pew-pew is a shorter game because it was Felduary. So I was playing a lot of Feld.
Surprised you played anything other than the Feld.
I did. I know. I did. And it was a good month. It was a really good month. So this is Conspiracy Abyss Universe. It came out in 2019, has a current rating of 7.5, plays 2 to 4 in 30 minutes with a weight of 1.5, is designed by Bruno Cathala and Charles Chevalier. Art is by Pascal Quidot, and it's published by Bombix.
Mm-hmm.
So this is very much a card game. It says card game set in the world of Abyss, but I feel like it is, I shouldn't say a card version because Abyss was really a card game, but like a simplified Abyss. If you've played the big board game, then when you play this, there are not many surprises.
Okay.
So it feels very, very similar to its bigger brother, but it plays in much less time. So there are 2 decks in this game. There's a deck of lords and there is a deck of locations. Sound familiar? So on your turn, you simply choose to take 1, 2, or 3 lords from the deck and pick one and keep it. Or you can take a discard pile. So the discard piles end up being, there's like 5 colors. So there's green lords and yellow lords and blue lords. So as you pick up cards and discard them, they get discarded by color and you can have piles of them. So on your turn, you can choose to take all the reds that have been discarded, for example. And they go in an upside down pyramid in front of you. And when you place them, some of them have like special powers like swap, two lords. The person who plays after you has to only take one off the deck and like that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And then there are also keys. So similar to Abyss, there are keys. There's gold and silver keys. If you get two gold keys, then you get a location. If you get two silver keys, you get a location. If you get a gold key and a silver key and then a third key, you get a location. And the locations have a similar press your luck feel. You pick one, two, or three, or you take one that's already been discarded. You pick one, the rest go out on the table. And they, you know, they're pretty straightforward, like 3 points for every blue lord you have, that sort of thing.
Okay.
There are also pearls in this game, not pearl bits, but pearls on the lord. So some of the lords will have one or two pearls showing, and there's a card that goes back and forth to the player who has the most pearls, and whoever at the end of the game has the most pearls has that card, gets an extra 5 points. And the game ends when someone's laid their 15th card. So it ends up being a pyramid. The base is 5, but it's upside down. Base of 5, then 4, then 3, then 2, then 1. And of course, because the way the game plays in that you might end up getting one card, or hey, if there's a huge discard pile of red, you might get 4 cards in a turn.
Okay.
So the pace of the game is largely dependent on how the players are playing the game. So, like, for example, I played this with Rich today, and he ended up getting a large discard pile, and his pyramid finished long before mine did. So there's like a little bit of it's a bit of a race, if you will. Yeah, so that's pretty much the game. You get points at the end for each, so the lords are numbered. So, for each color, your highest lord, you get points for. So like if your highest purple lord is a 6, you get 6 points. Okay. You get points for all your locations. You get points for having the most pearls. And then you also get points for your longest contiguous, connection of lords of one color. And you get like 3 points per lord, which is pretty good. So yeah, so that's the game. It's like super, super quick. Mm-hmm. It says 30 minutes. That's probably a 4-player game. I've played it at 2 and it definitely feels much quicker than that. It's a super quick teach. The bits. There's nothing special here. It's just cards. The cards are nice. They're good quality. You know, they're not going to die on you very quickly. The art is the same as the Abyss art, which is nice. It comes in a tin, which sucks.
Ugh.
Yeah. And just like its big brother, there's like, I think, well, if there's 5 colors, I'm going to guess there's 5 different tins that you can choose from.
And the important question, Michelle, which tin did you get?
I got the blue one. Mm. Yeah. I liked the way the Lord looked on it. It's a good game. Like, it's for 15 minutes or 20 minutes or whatever, however long it took us at 2, not very long, it sure felt like there were enough decisions to keep it interesting. Like, there's that really fun balance of like, okay, I really want a purple lord, but if I pick up 3 cards to increase my chances of a purple lord, I'm also putting these out on the discard for somebody else to pick up. You know, so there's a lot of that, like looking at what your opponents are doing, deciding how bad you want to try to go for something, all that push your luck stuff, which is great in a 30 minute game. I think it did a really good job of capturing the essence of Abyss in a small package. So I am going to give this one 'Tis a Gooder.
Nice.
Yeah. Now, it's not necessarily a game that like most of my 'Tis a Gooders are like bigger games. Mm-hmm. So I was originally going to give this a 3 because I was like, yeah, it's fine, you know. But then when I thought about like what space it lives in, so the space of like a filler, that's nice and quick, but interesting, then it became a 4 for me. I was like, yeah, you know, there's enough there. And if you like Abyss, you'll probably like this one. It doesn't replace Abyss.
Mm-hmm.
But it just gives you that same, that essence, that same feel that mm-hmm. Big Brother did in much less time and in a smaller package,
nice.
If that's your thing.
Well, just by the way you described it, I'm wondering if this might be a decent choice for Board Game Club.
It could be, yeah, mm-hmm. actually. Yeah. Yeah, fun art, some, you know, interaction between players in terms of, yeah, that giving and taking. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. Nice.
Yep.
All righty. Well, we,
That's it.
That's it, because we
already did your pew-pew.
We did, and we are just going to motor through all the bits.
We're going to but we're not actually going to because here's the thing. There are no good threads right now on BGG, I swear. There's a lot going on about Asmodee's pricing policy. And I considered us talking about it, and I thought, you know what? Everyone's probably heard enough about it already.
Yeah, that's true.
So we're gonna balance all the threads on Asmodee's pricing policy with a with some bad sound effects, and we're literally going to do all the bits.
All the bits.
So we're gonna go through a bunch of our bit segments as fast as we can.
Yeah.
In our effort to balance out all the noise about Asmodee's pricing policy. Not that it's bad that there's noise. It's just that we're gonna try to balance that noise. Give people a reprieve.
It's going to be hot.
Hot like a hot topic.
you like how I set you up there?
I did. That was quite good.
I brought my trusty pillow here, so I'm going to let you talk for a little bit. And I'm going to take a power nap.
Okay, sounds good. So this hot topic is Felduary Celebratuary.
Oh dear.
I tried. All right. So, as you may or may not know, Sean likes to take naps. No. It was just Felduary, which is my favorite month of the year because I play all the Stefan Fel games that I own. And Feld happens to be and is still my favorite designer. So, I thought I would give you guys a quick update because last year I ranked all my Felds. And so, I did the same thing this year. So I played 20 Felds in Felduary. And there are some that I have owned, some Felds I've owned, like Roma 2 and, the Pillars of the Earth dual one, Builder's Duel or something. Mm-hmm. I've gotten rid of those. So I don't collect Felds unless I like it enough to keep it. So he has more than 20 games, but those are the ones I own. Okay, so I have split my Felds into three tiers. My tier one is Sparkle, because Spark, so that's Sparkles. Mm-hmm. Those are my favorites. Then I have Gooder Plus and Gooder Minus, because there's no such thing as a bad game that Feld comes out with. Okay.
Sorry, I'm taking a nap here.
Right, I did tell you to bring a pillow. All right, so my Gooder Minuses are Castles of Burgundy, the card game, and the dice game, which I had. That's didn't change from last year. I put also for good or minus Year of the Dragon in the Year of the Dragon, which moved from tier two to tier three this year.
Oh, I think just, no.
I know. This is big stuff. I don't know. I play a lot of games and I'm like, yeah, I think this is a bit of nostalgia for me, to be honest. La Isla is in a good or minus, the good or minus, the tier three, same as last year. Luna actually moved down to tier three. I find this one, oh, it was there as well. Never mind. It was there last year. Jorvik, same. Tier three was tier three last year. And moved from tier two to tier three this year was Macau. Macau. So these are all games that I like. I'm still calling them good or minus. I still like them, but of all the Felds, they're my least favorite, if you will. Yeah, Macau, I don't know. I don't know why that one gets so much love. I feel like I'm missing something. Or maybe it's just because it's out of print.
People want what they
can't have. Yeah. All right, so my tier two is Gooder Plus. So Aquasphere was in here. So it moved actually from tier three to tier two this year. I quite enjoyed my play of it. Bruges is in my tier two. A game has a little bit too much randomness to be in a tier one for me. Notre Dame, very sweet little game. Where was it last year? Yeah. Oh, yeah. Look at that. That one was in tier two as well last year. Rialto, yep, tier two, stayed in tier two. I like this game. No one talks about it, but I think it's good. I want to try it at four soon because I think I've only played it at two and three. But it's good. I don't know. I don't know why it doesn't get more love. And Strasbourg was in tier two and stayed in tier two. Another game that never gets talked about. It is out of print. But like everyone loved Spikerstadt when it was out of print. And Strasbourg is not the same game, but it has like an auction mechanic. And I'm just surprised again that it just doesn't get talked about more. All right, my tier one, my Sparkle. Ugh, I'm such a girl. Forum Trajanum moved from tier two to tier one this year. That's a game that I just keep going back to. I love playing it. I think it's really solid. Merlin moved from tier two to tier one. I have way more tier ones this year. Yeah, another game I just really love. Shouldn't love it. It's kind of like this year, I think... Yeah, two expansions, two queenies. The box is getting ridiculous. It's all a bit much, but I still really enjoy the game. So there you go. But it might be a tier two next year. Carpe Diem stayed in tier one. Such a solid, solid game. I'm terrible at it, but I love it. Trajan, tier one last year, tier one this year. I think that's like definitely one of his more popular ones. Yeah, I really like that one. Amerigo, tier one last year, tier one this year. Love that game. Also another one that doesn't get a ton of love. And honestly, I think it has something to do with that box size. Like if you're going to come out with a queen big box, you know, I think for people, they have to really love it to make the space. And I don't think they needed to make it that big. But Cube Tower's cool. Oracle of Delphi was in tier two, and I've moved it to tier one. This was actually the first game I reached for. Wait, can you repeat that? Oracle of Delphi moved from tier two to tier one.
I thought you said tier three to tier one. Okay.
Oh, no, no. Okay. There were no two-tier movers, if you will. Yeah, this was the first one I reached for when I realized, oh my god, it's Velduary! I really, 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 really like this game. Yep. It's so good, and it's just another one that I don't think gets enough praise. When it came out, it kind of fizzled out. Like, nobody seemed to really like it, but I think it's got its few fans. Castles of Burgundy, of course, it's tier one. I got the 20th anniversary edition this year. They could have done way more. It was a bit of a disappointment, but I still like the updated art. I do think it's a brighter game. There are problems with it, like the animals are way too small. And I appreciate having everything in one rule book because I had everything, but like printed and purchased. And I had like, you know, you have that like pile of rule books that you go through when you collect everything. Mm-hmm. And it was really annoying. So now it's like one rule book to rule them all. It's wonderful.
Oh okay. My gosh.
I know. You're having so much fun right now.
So much ridiculous. Fun.
Okay, last one. And I think this is my favorite. Oh, I was going to say about Castles of Burgundy. I've played the app so many times, I'm kind of getting sick of it. Like, I still love the game, but I'm kind of like,
what?
It's kind of becoming like the pandemic for me where I'm like feeling a little burnt out on it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good news is I have lots of games to play, so it's not like I'm, you know, forced to play anything. Okay, last but not least, and I think this is my favorite Feld, Bora Bora. This was in tier one last year. It's in tier one this year. I think that this is a very, very, very good game. I love playing it. It's so good. Have you played Bora Bora?
I've played like half a game or a couple. I need to play it again. I think I mentioned it on the show there. I played it, but it was such a bad teach and such a bad experience that it took me a few years to get over it. Now I'm probably ready to get over it and actually try it. So,
yeah, there's a lot. Like, you look at the board, it looks really busy. The player boards look really busy, and there's like a lot of little things, but it's actually like a really smooth game. And it's just so tight. Oh, it's so good. So good. That's a spark game right there. Spark of sparks. All right. Oh, there you go. You made it. You're alive.
You know how many Felds I played in February?
Felduary.
In Felduary? What did I say? February?
Yeah. Like, come on.
Wow.
Get it together, man.
None. Zero. You actually played more Felds in February than I played games total.
So we've officially proven that I'm better than you.
Debatable.
Speaking of debatable.
Yes. Nice. No, not this. No, we're... No. Hey, you...
Next up!
Home
better
run?
Better up! This next up better be spring a home training. Run.
It's the best time of the year, Michelle. Spring training.
Love spring training. Best.
Love it. All right, I'll get you out of your misery, because the game you're talking about in the next up, I am like super duper interested in. So let me just get you out of your misery really quickly.
Thank you.
For my first next up. So this is, by the way, a bit where we kind of talk about things in the pipeline that we've heard about in the board game industry that we're interested in, or that tickles our fancy, so to speak. I mentioned this already when I was asking Michelle my question. Marvel Villainous Infinite Power is coming out, I believe, this summer. I'm going to guess it's a Gen Con release. But this is taking the Villainous system and using it for Marvel characters. So, I mean, it's Infinite Power, and Thanos is on the box. So I'm guessing Thanos is a character in it. I don't know who else will be. I don't know if that's been released. But my guess is probably at least Loki, and I don't know who else. Maybe, like, I don't know. Loki's the only main villain I could think of. Well, he's kind of a hero now, so whatever. But I'm super, super duper mega excited for this, because the Villainous is one of my favorite games, one of my most played games, and I cannot wait to do this. I did hear, which I'm kind of disappointed in it, that based on the way it is constructed, I don't think you can, like, mix and match. Like, I don't think you can play Disney Villainous and Marvel Villainous together for whatever reason, but maybe there will be a way to do that. I don't know, but... That's it. Yeah, I'm super, super, so excited for this, Michelle. So excited.
Yeah, I can tell. Yeah, I'm actually just as excited for my next one. Somehow this flew under my radar, and had we been recording our top anticipated releases of 2020 today, this would be my number one. So my next up is Gollum. Which is coming out in 2020. It's going to play 1 to 4 players in 90 to 120 minutes. And it's by the same team that brought you my number one game, Grand Austere Hotel. And this one is called A Gollum. It's a engine building game. And it looks like it's either an evolution, or perhaps Lorenzo Il Magnifico, the card game, was just a side idea. But this one has those marbles and that marble tray, which is super exciting, because they're bits and they're fun, and why not? So it appears that each line in the tray of marbles is a different action. So there's like a work action, which says you activate something in the city to get bonuses. There's a golem, which is obtaining resources to build golems. There's artifacts, which apparently give you bonuses. Like permanent bonuses, and then there's some spell set collection in another one, and then there's another like wild action. And then depending on which row you choose, depending on how many marbles are there, determines how much, I guess, how strong your action can be. And then also what matters is the color you take. Apparently there are tracks, which is super novel. Like, come on, tracks in a Euro game? Okay. External, commercial, ancient, and magic. So there's 4 tracks. So depending on the color you take, you're going to move up those tracks. And it says you need to move up on those to control your golems. So there you go. It says the creature, if it's uncontrolled and you haven't moved up, it can become dangerous and destroy the neighborhood. So it almost sounds a little bit like the Vatican track in Lorenzo Il Magnifico. If you're feeling what I'm putting down, Sean.
I'm feeling it.
All right.
Michelle, you left out the best part about this game.
What?
You get to play a mystical rabbi. Oy vey.
Oh, that's crazy. Yeah.
Yep. So, you know, hey.
Cabalists who create and grow powerful and magical creatures. There will be no theme.
This description
gives you so much theme, but you know it's just going to be a bunch of wicked mechanisms thrown together.
Speaking about a wicked mechanism, ships have wicked mechanisms to make them go on the water.
Boo.
Are you saying boo or boo?
No, that's my ship sound.
Oh, okay, good. I thought you were booing my joke. I'm just making
No, I wouldn't. Sean, I would never.
Oh my gosh. Look, I cannot believe this is what you're shipping out.
I just sold it tonight. Okay, so wait, before we get into this, this is our shipping out bit where we talk about games we are shipping out. So either have sold or are going to sell, and just we talk about why. So Sean is groaning over my choice.
Justify
just get it over. Okay, well, I sold Quacks of Quedlinburg tonight. Because someone was looking for it, and I was like, yep, I could get rid of my copy. I enjoyed this game. I thought it was pretty neat, but it felt a little bit long for what it was, to be honest. And my experiences were just like, it was so swingy. And I really didn't like the catch-up mechanism. Like, every game I played of this, someone was just way ahead. And the rat tails didn't do anything. And... yeah, I mean, if someone wanted to play this game, I would happily play it. I just, when I think about it, I don't get sparkly feelings in my tummy.
I am nodding my head so much that I'm giving myself whiplash right now.
Why? Oh, you're nodding your head. Isn't nodding?
Like shaking it back and forth.
Yeah, nodding is usually my thing, I guess. So you're in agreement with me.
No, woo! Okay, listen,
this is a good episode.
Speaking of whiplash.
Okay.
Okay, my ship out game is, and this one actually also really also hurts me to get rid of because I absolutely adore the designer. He's probably one of my top five favorite designers. And that is Eco's First Continent from AEG. And the designer I mentioned is John D. Clare, who I have an absolute man crush on because... you know, I love Mystic Veil and Custom Heroes. They're two of my go-to games. I love them so much. But this game, it's partly my fault. I played this game once, and I just sold it as well. I played it once. It was a five-player game. None of us had played. It was an awful experience. And we talked earlier about my Bora Bora experience, and the big difference with Bora Bora is I did not own Bora Bora. This I did own. It took over three hours to play. BGG says 45 to 75 minutes. And I don't know why it took so long. I'm not sure. A couple of the people at the table who I played with are prone to AP. But even then, that's more than double the maximum playtime listed on BGG. And everything about this game, it's really nice. It's got chunky tiles in it. I like the art, you know, but it's just, yeah, it's just that play just soured me on it. And when I was calling my games and going through what I'm going to sell, I'm like, it's going to be a long time before I get a better feeling about this game. So it got shipped out.
Too bad. Yeah, this was a game where it's like I saw all the greatness that it could be, but it was, it was too combo-y for me.
Which is part of the reason I was interested in.
Yeah, I know. I'm surprised. Yeah. But yeah, I could see how it could lead to AP too, because there are so many different options. And then you do this, 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 and then you do this. Oh my God.
I do know a few people who own this. So I don't feel bad. Like, if I want to go back and try it, I definitely can. But in terms of my collection, it hit the bricks.
Speaking of your collection, womp womp.
Hey, that's our shelf shaming bit where we talk about games that have been sitting on our shelves and we should get them to the table, but we may or may not. They may get shipped out. So my first one, Michelle, I just put on here as a way, again, to push myself. We'll see if it works. I don't know. Probably won't. Which is Spirit Island. And I just recently actually picked this up. But having played Spirit Island before and enjoyed it quite a bit, I know the way this is going to go. It's going to be like, this is a complex game with a lot of moving levers. So I'm going to have to read it and probably have to teach it to a bunch of people because I don't near the people I played it with in the past. And I'm going to be really daunted by it and not want to do it. And it's just going to sit there. And like in 6 months, when I sell, I'm going to be like, oh, I'm probably going to sell this. But I've played it twice and really, really enjoyed it. So I'm putting it on here to push myself to actually bother doing it. And yes, I want to play it. And I think when I bought it, I got it recently. It has the expansion in there, which I'm unfamiliar with. So I'm looking forward to actually doing it. I'm going to push myself to make sure I play it.
I believe in you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, good luck with that. My shelf shame is automobiles. I bought this game a long time ago. Like, if I followed your year rule, this would have been gone.
Five times over.
Yeah, probably. The reason I haven't gotten rid of this game is because the people who have played it say such great things about it, and it's a big builder kind of like Orléans, although I know that's maybe I should just say it's a big builder and that's just leave it at that. Yeah, and then I think one of the reasons it hasn't hit the tables, because a lot of the time it definitely needs a higher player count, and a lot of the time I will try to learn a game and kind of play it either solo or two-handed solo before I bring it to the group. And this just doesn't seem like it would be very fun to try that with. So then I just never learn it and it never hits the table. But I refuse to get rid of it until I try it. So, yeah. So you can hold me accountable to automobiles and I'll make sure you play Spirit Island.
That's fair.
Mm-hmm. Just wondering, Sean, should we kick it with Kickstarter?
Kicking it.
Kicking. this is our bit where we talk about a Kickstarter game that we backed or are looking to back or excited about launching. Did you already talk about this? Oh, no. No, you didn't.
What?
I thought you already talked about this. Hi.
Oh, hi. Did I?
No, you didn't.
No, I don't think I did. I mean, I've talked about it, and that's Marvel United. Hey, it's a Marvel thing. From CMON, which is, at the time of this, well, when this drops, it'll have, like, less than 2 days-ish before it's up. It is made, it's going up now, as I'm looking, over $2,220,000 Canadian. Yeah, so this is the new CMON game, the chibi game on, and I might have talked about it in the next up, actually, now that I think about it, maybe, I don't know.
No, but, you talked about Marvel Villainous. Yeah. And this is why Marvel gets so confusing, because there's so many different games and.
So, listen.
Characters and.
I am not sure. Okay, listen. There are a ton of characters. There are like tons. They're just like constantly pooping out the minis for this. This is a minis game. It's like chibi artwork, which at first I thought I would be totally off. But looking at them, they're actually really, really awesome. If I painted, I would have this game in a heartbeat. That's the biggest issue that's keeping me from it right now. Because looking at the game itself, it really doesn't seem like it's much more than a card game. And a simplistic card game at that. Something along the lines of like Thanos Rising or those various Rising games from the op. It doesn't seem like there's a ton in it for something that's probably going to cost like $200 to $300 to get the whole spiel, Canadian, to get the whole spiel. However, like I said, if I painted, if I could bring myself to actually do painting, I would get this in a heartbeat because there's tons of plastic in it and they look absolutely fantastic, even though it's kind of chibi-ish. So I desperately want to be able to play this game before I actually spend the money on it. So I might have to back it at like $1 or something. And then, which is what I usually do with CMON games and talk myself out of doing it, as I've mentioned on the show before. So we'll see. That's Marvel United. It looks like an awesome package in terms of the minis. But like I said, I think the gameplay, you know, for paying that much money and I don't paint, I don't know if it's worth it for me.
That's fair.
Yeah.
I'm looking at it now. It does look cute. I like the style.
Super cute.
Yeah. Cool. Mine is the Merlin Big Box. Speaking of Felds, Queen Games just launched Merlin Big Box. Those are big words for me, you know. So they're launching. It's kind of like a deluxe. I don't know if they're trying to like. I guess they're following the market trends. But it's also kind of deluxified, if you will. They're coming out with a third expansion, which looks interesting. And there's a few modules. And then they're also upgrading some of the base game bits. So all of the tokens, like the stands, so the sword, the grail, the ring, those are all going to be acrylic.
Ooh.
Standees. Yeah, so that'll be neat to see. You don't really see that very often. And then they're changing all the dice to like marble dice, and there will be game trays.
Ooh.
Which is very nice, because as I was saying in my incredibly interesting hot topic, Merlin is getting quite bloated and has a lot of bits. So it'll be nice to have them well organized and sorted in a big box. The Kickstarter is insanely expensive for what you get, but yeah, there you go. There's Queen.
Crazy. The Kickstarter can be insanely expensive.
I know. Hey,
spoiler.
Okay. Spoiler.
All right. Oh, we got through almost all of them. We have one more to do, Michelle.
And I know you had no faith, but I knew
our,
we could do
it. It's
our
namesake.
It's all the Bits. We haven't done this one in a while.
We haven't. This is our bit where we talk about some bits that we've enjoyed fondling. And let's see, what's Michelle going to talk about?
So it is Feld. Yeah. I mean, to be fair, it's like Feld's been on my mind, you know. so my all the bits bit is these Macau trays I actually built using a laser cut file, which we can put in the show notes. That was on BGG from Corey Young. And there are you put your windrows in the middle, and then there's a tray for each number. So it just keeps all the cubes in one spot and you don't get mixed up, and it's wonderful. And so, yeah, they cut them out of wood, and then I stained them and I glued them together. And it's really, 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 really nice and a little bit excessive, but, you know. Especially for a tier 3 game.
Right? That's a tier 3 game.
Tier 3. Crazy. Yeah.
Tier 3, yeah.
But it does really, it's, they're quite nice.
Are they?
Nice. Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll definitely. Is this the gate? Oh no, you. Yeah. Okay. We'll share this. They are quite nice. Oh, that's that Corey Young. I know that Corey Young. Yeah, they're really nice.
Mm-hmm.
And you made these?
Yeah. So I got someone to cut them for me, and then I stained them all and glued them together.
Wow! Look at you, Miss Artsy Craftsy woman.
Yeah, I had to have them.
Cool.
They do enhance the gameplay, I find.
I also
bought little buildings instead of cubes. And now I'm seeing someone has like upgraded resource bits, so I'm gonna probably have to look into that.
We're a tier 3 game.
Well, tier 3 Feld, to be fair.
Which is like a spark for anything else.
That's right.
That's fair. All right, can I now do my transitions, which I forgot all of them?
I think maybe we should talk about Feld more.
Let me
if
get
you
my
had
pillow.
A dollar, if you had a dollar for every time I said Feld this episode, you'd probably be not rich. But no, you could maybe buy yourself a game.
I was going to say, I could at least buy a Conspiracy Abyss. So.
Mm-hmm. There you go. All right, okay. Transition from that,
okay.
Bud.
I forgot my transitions. But I'm recently, so I went on a bat the other night. I was like, as usual, I couldn't sleep or whatever. So I was on Etsy and just went absolutely bananas. Wingspan accessories to pimp out my Wingspan game. And so I got these acrylic tokens to replace, you know, the food tokens that you feed your fish from someone called Laserland, I think is what it's called. And they are like kind of see-through acrylic, really nice. I'm super happy with them. I can't wait to play the game with them. I'll include the link as well below. Super excited about that. I got these birdhouses, 3D printed birdhouses to be like the player tokens, which again, super excited nice. About. And then I didn't buy these, but they have, and I've seen people with them. They have these bird nests made like crocheted bird nests.
We have a friend who builds those.
Yeah. So I have a friend who does lots of like knitting and crocheting and stuff, and she is going to make me 5 of them for my game. So I didn't have to buy those, but she said she was going to make them for me. So I'm super excited. I'm going to have like such a pimped out fancy schmancy version of Wingspan.
Sweet.
Yeah.
I approve of this message.
Yeah.
I have the birdhouses, but I keep going back and forth on the food tokens because there's so many of the cards that you have to stack the food on the card.
Yeah, that's a decent point.
And so I was like, maybe like the discs. I know BGG is coming. I think they haven't come out with them yet, but they're coming out with like the circular bits.
Yeah, they have circular bits.
But, and I think yeah, I don't know.
No, they're not circular. The Meeple Source ones aren't circular. They're in the shape. But we'll see. I'll let you know when I actually play it.
Yeah, do let me know. I mean, I guess you could stack wood ones same as long as they're flat, I guess. But
I do enjoy doing a fair bit of caching, if you will.
Yeah.
I don't know what that means.
I don't either. I'm just agreeing with you.
Hey, speaking of not knowing how to do anything and nothing meaning nothing. I just used a double negative. Oh my goodness. That was episode 57.
Yeah, our episodes always progressively get worse by the end. Like we just run out of steam.
Stuff. Yeah. I'm like, yeah, especially with you talking about Feld so much this episode.
I know.
I'm like, I've fallen asleep like 5 times.
Yeah, I know. I'm sorry. I really appreciate you sticking with us through this episode, Sean. I know it was very difficult. To be fair, I had to listen to you talk about Marvel twice.
That's true. Even. Marvel's awesome. So
pretty even.
Well, how about you take us home?
Or I could drag this out and stay up.
I'm going to go into sloth mode. That's okay. What I'm going.
Let me carry your sloth. Before we close with the show.
You like how I did a callback to earlier in the episode? Boom, continuity and canon.
Before we close out the show, we just want to say thanks again to our amazing listeners and our show sponsor, Board Game Bliss, a store where you can find an amazing selection of games from around the world, bringing joy to you and your loved ones. The next time you are playing with someone who has AP, maybe suggest you use that time to click the subscribe button and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. Thanks again. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.